Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Key Exchange Server 2007 scenarios, examples, demos, and how-tos. My name is Alex Macklin. Let's start this session by going into more detail on what we'll be covering. We've made this session as hands-on as possible with over 70 minutes of interactive demonstrations. Keeping to three broad themes, the first part of the session shows how Exchange Server 2007 can provide built-in protection within your Exchange organization. We'll show you how to establish an ethical firewall using transport rules and how to establish and test local continuous replication to provide continuous availability. Next, we'll discuss how Exchange offers anywhere access to your mailbox, and to reinforce this, we'll run through two great demonstrations. In the first, we'll show you many of the great new features available in Outlook Web Access 2007, including user interface enhancements, improvements to the address book, and the calendar concierge features. In the second demo, we'll look at Outlook Voice Access and use it to manage our email and calendar appointments. Unified Messaging, which provides the foundations for Outlook Voice Access, is an all-new feature for Exchange 2007, allowing you to integrate email, fax, and voice messages in one mailbox and get access to it from anywhere. In the third part of today's session, we'll look at how easy Exchange Server is to manage, and we'll show you how easy the two demonstrations we're going to run. The first looks at performing day-to-day tasks like managing recipients and mailbox databases by using the improved Exchange Management Console. The second demo will get you up to speed on the simplicity and power of the Exchange Management Shell when we provision a server with a simple script. By the end of the session, you'll have a great understanding of how to perform many of the administrative tasks that Exchange 2007 makes possible. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Next is a brief overview of what would be helpful but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It will be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. In today's presentation, we've broken the session into three parts, each one focusing on a core area of Exchange Server 2007: built-in protection, anywhere access, and operational efficiency. Let's take a brief look at these three core themes and the investments that the Exchange product group has made around them. Built-in protection includes new features to ensure high availability and protection from disasters without added cost, as well as improved technologies to safeguard users and your organization's valuable data from internal and external threats, such as spam, viruses, and email tampering. In addition, Exchange Server 2007 provides built-in functionality to help simplify compliance with internal and regulatory controls. Anywhere access investments center around making the user more productive by centralizing communications, providing a common experience users know and love, Outlook, that is accessible anywhere at any time, and supporting collaboration by making it easier to schedule meetings and share documents remotely, even without access to the corporate network. Operational efficiency capabilities in Exchange Server 2007 will help IT get more out of their hardware and networking investments and make deployment easier and more flexible, while giving administrators more time for value-added work. Let's start today's session with a look at built-in protection features in Exchange Server 2007. These include both higher availability and regulatory conformance features. Exchange 2007 improves quite substantially over 2003 in journaling infrastructure and provides a feature set that enables you to comply with regulatory information retention. Recent accounting scandals have forced governments to create legislation that requires companies to retain email messages for specific periods and to produce these messages upon request. The period that you must retain messages can vary, but it can be from 3 to 6 years. Some legislation requires that you keep the message metadata, subject, sender, recipient, dates, easily accessible and provide a mechanism for the searching and retrieval of relevant messages upon request by the authorized legal authority. Outside the legal requirements, your organization may want to screen email messages to ensure they do not contain inappropriate content. You may also want to add legal disclaimers to outgoing communication, and you may decide that certain messages require an intellectual property disclosure. Exchange Server 2007 provides a number of features to help you comply with both legal and corporate policies. As an administrator, you want to minimize the long-term storage of messages because they consume valuable storage space. However, to remain compliant, you must store messages for a designated period. In addition, you must provide a mechanism for easy searching and retrieval of relevant messages. The email lifecycle provides these facilities. It preserves messages only for as long as required, and it has enhanced search capabilities to help you locate the appropriate message from within a large store. Transport agents enable you to enforce the other elements of your corporate messaging policy. The Hub Transport Server can filter messages by using agents and, where appropriate, apply legal disclaimers, declare intellectual property rights, and filter messages for content. The Hub Transport Server provides the following agents for this purpose: Bridgehead Mail Flow Control Agent, Disclaimer Agent, Journaling Agent, Address Rewrite Agent, Attachment Filtering Agent. The Edge Transport Server uses additional agents for providing message hygiene from untrusted networks. Together, these agents provide regulatory and legal compliance controls that do the following: provide regulatory ethical walls, provide for message retention and discovery, protect against personally identifiable information disclosure, apply handling instructions for regulated users, send copies to compliance officers for review. The agents also provide corporate policy controls that do the following. Apply legal disclaimers to outbound messages, protect against intellectual property disclosure, block offensive language in messages, apply permission controls to messages. Let's see how Exchange 2007 provides higher availability. Exchange Server 2007 now supports log shipping as a way of providing an up-to-the-moment backup of a storage group to guard against storage group and database failures. As you are probably aware, transaction log files are used in Exchange Server to hold changes that are about to be made to the databases in a given storage group. These logs contain a record of all changes made to the databases since the last normal backup. If you take a copy of a storage group, all that's needed to synchronize the databases it contains with a live system is to replay the log files against the copy. That is the basis of both LCR and CCR. As you are also probably aware, performing a restore operation is a time-consuming process, and if we can reduce the situations where we need to perform them, that's got to be a good thing. The Exchange product group looked at the information about when and why restores were being done, and they discovered that the most common reason for performing a restore was a disk drive failure. All bearings in a disk drive wear out every couple of years, and people had to look to backup to recover. Log shipping is a great way to get around that because it's a continuous replication. Each log file is played back against a duplicate storage group's databases, so you always have a live copy of the databases available in case of disk drive fails. In some ways, LCR is like a locally stored mirror of the database. However, there are situations where other failures can cause the databases to become unavailable. If your server power supply goes out, having a local copy of the database won't help. CCR was designed for two computers to support a complete server failure and therefore addresses this problem. You create a copy of the databases on another computer, and log shipping keeps them synchronized. It's been designed so that those servers can also be in two different physical sites, geographically separate if you want, to have insurance against site failure, and this is all built into Exchange 2007. A side benefit of having multiple copies of a database at all times is that when you do perform backup operations, you can do so on the standby database, which will reduce the performance impact on your users. And although LCR and CCR reduce the likelihood of having to resort to a restore operation after a disk failure, they also reduce the number of backups that you need to perform. Of course, having a second copy of a database doesn't protect you from accidentally deleting something, since the deletion will be duplicated on the replica. The other major reason for performing a restore is when users have deleted information. The dumpster interval was 3 days in Exchange 2003. That's been increased to 14 days in Exchange 2007. This should allow users to recover their information without you needing to restore whole databases and then merge mailboxes across. Next, we'll review each of these technologies. By reducing the number of backup operations, the cost of performing backups and maintaining archives is reduced. Administrators are always looking for ways to reduce costs, and LCR can provide a reduction in the total cost of ownership of Exchange. Although you cannot guard against all forms of data loss, with LCR you can protect against the most common. Loss of a storage group through the loss of the underlying disk, and you won't even need to perform a restore. Backups do not provide fault tolerance, they provide a means to recover lost data. A system that can continue to operate after a failure of a component is said to be fault tolerant. With LCR, your server will continue to operate even if a disk fails, provided you have everything in place. Log files and correct disk configurations have always given you the ability to recover to the point of failure, and now with log shipping, you can achieve a higher level of resilience. Simply stated, you need to perform far fewer backups. Previously, when a disk failed, you would need to replace it, perform a restore of the storage group, and then replay the logs since the last backup. Now you don't need to do anything, at least not immediately. The system is still running. Let's summarize the benefits of CCR and see how it takes reliability and recovery to the next level. CCR has all the benefits that LCR does, but provides a few more. Because Exchange Server 2007 only supports active-passive cluster configurations, there is no single point of failure. This makes the cluster more fault-tolerant. The more reliable your messaging system, the easier things will be for you. You don't have to install the cluster on shared storage devices. Because of this, CCR supports a wider range of storage. And you don't have to install on shared storage, which means the requirements for the server hardware are less stringent. Nor do you have to select hardware from the cluster category in the Windows Server catalog. As long as the servers in the clusters are comparable, that's all you need to worry about. With Exchange Server 2007, you can create a cluster that spans multiple data centers without the need for third-party software. Everything you need is built into Exchange. The Exchange product group has unified the cluster installation process with the standard mailbox server role installation, so no specialized knowledge is required to install CCR. It's quick and easy to set up. And all cluster-specific related management tasks are hidden underneath the associated generic Exchange Server management task. For example, when you perform storage group reconfiguration, Exchange Server performs the related CCR management tasks for you. Because CCR creates a second copy of databases on a passive node, the passive node can be used to offload the effect of doing regular backups. For example, by doing backups on the passive node, the backup window can be extended and the I/O load is no longer on the active node. It's time for the first set of demonstrations. In this two-step demo, we'll look at how to prevent two users from communicating sensitive information to one another. Holly Holt and Peter Houston are assigned to projects with clients Wingtip Toys and Trey Research. Because these clients compete with each other, and Holly Holt and Peter Houston possess highly sensitive information about the client's projects, it is a compliance requirement that they be unable to send email messages to each other. We're going to configure a global rule that prohibits these two users from sending email to each other, but we'll make an exception for emergencies and social interaction, and we'll meet this requirement by allowing only email messages that have the word emergency or social in the subject line. First, let's verify that they can communicate normally. We'll open Outlook Web Access for Holly Holt. Now we create a quick test message, press Ctrl-K to autocomplete Peter's address, and then enter the subject information about the Wingtip project. Then we type some body text and click Send. Let's see if Peter got the message. We open Owe as Peter. There's a message Holly shouldn't really have been sending us. Let's send her one back. They're exchanging confidential client information that shouldn't be shared. We need to prevent that. Let's start by creating a transport rule. First, load Exchange Management Console. Switch to the Hub Transport settings in the Organizational folder. Now we'll create the rule. Let's give it a meaningful name, and then let's enter the comment, Ethical Firewall configured to restrict mail between Holly Holt and Peter Houston. Let's now define the conditions. In the From People area, select Holly. Then in the Sent To People area, select Peter. Now we'll define the action. We're going to bounce the message back to the sender with a meaningful message such as, due to compliance restrictions, you are prohibited from contacting this person. That's self-explanatory. We want to let them communicate in particular circumstances, however, so we'll do that with an exception. Remember, we are only going to let email messages through with the words social or emergency in the subject line. The wizard walks us through the process. Next, we'll review the settings. Everything looks good, so we'll complete the rule. Of course, we need to do this in both directions. We create a new transport rule. We'll call this rule Wall, Peter Houston, and Holly Holt. Now let's define the conditions. We select Peter in the Select Senders dialog box. And then select the recipient, in this case, Holly. Again, we define the action as a bounce and explain to the sender what's happening. We'll use the same exceptions as before. We'll quickly review the settings again. They look fine, so we'll have the wizard create the rule. We'll type advice on the wingtip project in the subject line. Then, for the body of the message, we'll type, please can you give me some advice on the wingtip project? Let's send that. Peter doesn't get the message. If we switch back to Holly's mailbox and check for new messages, we can see that it is blocked. Now let's see if we can set up a social event. Peter is having a barbecue and wants Holly to help with the chicken wings. Let's select Holly as a recipient. In the subject line, we type the keyword social and then company barbecue on Saturday. In the body of the message, we'll type, you were invited to the company barbecue. Now we send the message. Now let's see if the transport server let that one through. We open Holly's mailbox, check for new messages, and there it is. Let's try sending a message to Peter. In the subject line, we'll type emergency, the other keyword, and then flood on the second floor. In the body of the message, we'll type, please cover all equipment with plastic. Now we send that message. If we switch to Peter's mailbox, we can see that the message was allowed through. Let's exit OWA and return to the presentation. Let's look at the next demo. In this demonstration, we'll set up and test local continuous replication. Let's look at how quickly and easily you can add local continuous replication. We'll perform this task from the console. Navigate to the Server Configuration Work Center and use the Manage Mailbox role in the action to jump to the right place. As LCR is designed for use with storage groups that contain only one database, we'll need to add a new storage group and an associated database. We'll call this storage group the replicated storage group for ease of reference. Now let's create a database. We'll call the database replicated database. Then we just complete the process. Now let's look at enabling LCR. Click the link in the action pane to enable local continuous backup. We need to specify a path for the system files first. Then we need to specify a path for the log files. Finally, we need to define the location for the existing databases within the storage group. Remember that LCR operates at the storage group level by using log shipping. Microsoft recommends that you only define one database per storage group, so in essence, LCR operates at the database level. Then we complete the process. To verify, we can use Windows Explorer to check for the presence of the database and log files. They are all present, that appears to have been successful. Let's return to the presentation. Let's take a look at the agenda. In this part of the session, we'll be looking at the new user interface that is provided in Outlook Web Access 2007. We'll also be running through a demonstration on using Outlook Voice Access and Unified Messaging. The development team has worked really hard to produce a great email and calendaring experience from your web browser, and to provide a great degree of consistency. Many of the features added to OWA 2007 are features already available in Microsoft Office Outlook 2003, but that add great value to the inbox. Features like autocomplete. Just like Outlook, OWA now has autocomplete for email addresses. Type some of the recipient name and OWA starts to make suggestions. You can also press Ctrl and K to autocomplete a name. This is a small change, but it makes a big difference. Search functionality is also vastly improved in OWA and is equivalent to that in Outlook 2007. It's not only quicker, but also more logical and intuitive. You can find what you're looking for much more easily than in OWA 2003. You can now organize your messages by conversation in OWA. OWA also provides improved notifications. Users will receive notifications of new email, appointments, and other items. Users can configure this pop-up notification behavior to suit their needs, and administrators can globally control the notification infrastructure. Address book functionality has been radically overhauled in the Exchange 2007 version of OWA. Compare the basic address book functionality in Exchange 2003 to the feature-rich version in Exchange 2007. You'd have difficulty believing that this is in a web browser. But Outlook Web Access is more than just email. Calendaring and booking meetings plays a key part in the Outlook experience. Some of the calendaring improvements include: you can drag and drop meetings, create and view calendar folders, and automatically locate time slots when most attendees are available, taking account of their working hours. You can separate attendee and resource handling, use a recent room list cache, and use rich text editing in the body of meeting request text. The Exchange product group designed the unified messaging server role to unify the mailbox and to integrate the traditional items found in a mailbox, such as emails and calendar items, with faxes and voice messages. They also sought to simplify administrative tasks by consolidating the infrastructure required to support both email and telephony into a single unified system. The unified messaging server consists of several components. First, the automated attendant, which functions as an automatic telephone answering service. When you call Microsoft, you'll hear the auto attendant working. It's configured to use voice recognition, and then accesses the global address list to route calls to the appropriate personal department. It's expensive to employ receptionists, and this facility could offer your company some real cost savings. Although it's configured to use voice recognition at Microsoft, you can also use voice prompts, such as press 7 for sales and so forth. Second, unanswered calls get routed as email to your mailbox. If you are available, the call will be routed by the UM server to your extension, but if you're not, then you'll receive an email with the voice message attached. What's more, you can access this voice message from a variety of different clients, such as OWA, EAS, and Outlook. Third, the fax receiving service will route faxes based on your instructions. If you have a single fax number for your organization, faxes will be routed to a single mailbox for onward distribution. If you have a telephone number and a fax number, faxes are routed straight to your own inbox. Finally, if you have a single number for faxes and telephone calls, if you are answering an incoming fax call, you can use Outlook voice access to route it to a fax machine. If you don't answer the call, the UM server routes the fax to your mailbox automatically. Last, Outlook voice access, which enables you to access your mailbox items from a phone. As with other voice access systems, you can press 7 to delete, 3 to read again, and so on. But what's really great here is that you can use voice recognition to instruct the system to clear a calendar, read the next message, add a contact, and so on. That's all in Exchange 2007 Unified Messaging, some great end-user features, and some major cost savings for administrators. Unified messaging items in the Outlook 2007 interface have their own special icons. Voicemail can either be played directly in the message body, or you can choose to play it on the phone. Let's run through another demo. During this demo, we'll take a look at some of the new interface and functional enhancements that Outlook Web Access 2007 introduces. Demo 3, using the improvements in Outlook Web Access. During this demonstration, we'll look at the significant improvements that the Exchange product group has made to the Outlook Web Access 2007 interface. We'll look at the general email handling improvements and the improved calendaring support. Use email improvements. Outlook Web Access has retained the Outlook 2003 look and feel, so that it will be comfortable for a user who switches to OWA from Outlook. In the 2007 version, the designers have added some new touches to make this a better application, using some of the newer, more modern web techniques. The main design principle for OWA was that users shouldn't have to compromise on experience just because they were using a browser. By the time we reach the end of this demo, you'll see that this has been achieved. If we open this sample email from Katie Jordan, the first thing you'll notice is that it has a chart embedded in it. Let's say we want to forward this to Peter Houston, our PR manager. We click forward and OWA opens a composed message. One of the things you've always had in Outlook, but not in Outlook Web Access, is autocomplete. As we start typing Peter, if we press Ctrl plus K, OWA completes the rest of the name for us. On future messages, it will remember Peter and autocomplete his name as we type. Let's say we also want to send a copy of the report to Peter's boss, the marketing director. Another great improvement is the Office Outlook Web Access 2007 address book. If you click the CC button, you'll see the new address book. In previous versions of Office Outlook Web Access, you didn't see a list of potential recipients, but could only search for recipients. Now you can actually browse the global address list. In the center pane, you'll see a list of all the people who are in the global address list. You can also search for people directly from the address book user interface. The availability section calls the availability service for that person and gives us free busy information about that person for the next week or two, and displays it along with their office address, or in this case, Holly's phone number. The organization tab provides a quick view of a person's peers, his or her reports, his or her managers, and so on, all the way up to the top. Of course, each of these items is clickable, and it will open in a new window. We can double-click Holly Holt in the address book to add her to the message recipients, and then go ahead and send the message. Organize messages. In our sample inbox, we have several emails with varying subject lines regarding the Contoso Hotels opportunity, and it's somewhat confusing. Let's use the new categorization feature in OWA to bring some order to the chaos. Let's start by selecting a message from Mary with the subject of Contoso Hotels opportunity. Now let's right-click the category bar, which is currently clear. We'll add a new category for the Contoso project, and let's assign the color black. just enter a valid description. Now we can assign that category to any message related to the Contoso project. Let's just assign two messages to show you the process. This first message from Mary, and this one from John. If we want to highlight a message as urgent or to indicate some action is required, we can flag the message. Let's do that with this message from Katie. We want to work on this chart before tomorrow, so we can flag messages that we want to return to or that we require some other action from us. Let's repeat that on another message. We can also sort the messages by due date, so that it's quite clear what is urgently waiting our attention. In addition, we can use Conversation View to sort through our inbox. Let's say we've read some of them, but not others, and we're not sure where we are in the process. In OWA, we can use the Conversations View, which you may recognize from Outlook. If we go to Arrange by Conversation, we can see that it arranges the messages based on conversation. We can see who has responded to whom. If there's a different thread, OWA will handle the indentation of that correctly. We just click and read those messages. Now we'll look at how to search messages. Let's say someone has sent us something about upcoming system maintenance on the SharePoint server. If we wanted to see all the messages in our mailbox regarding SharePoint, we could use the new search dialog box. Type SharePoint and then click search. You can see in real time just how quick the search is. The search has found a variety of items. The second item is one with a link to a SharePoint workspace. The next few items are from the company IT director providing a technical overview of the new systems that his department is building on the company SharePoint server. When we've completed the search, we can click clear to return to the inbox. This takes advantage of the new search capability that's coming with Exchange 2007 that makes full text content indexing much faster than it has been in the past. It boosts performance while simultaneously reducing the amount of system resource required. Search will be in the same place in the Outlook Web Access as in Outlook 2007. Let's start with a demonstration of some of the new features provided by the Scheduling Assistant. These include the Out-of-Office Assistant, which you can now schedule so that you can set it and forget it. Let's open Internet Explorer first. We enter the Outlook Web Access address. Once we are in, we'll just click the Options menu and select the Out-of-Office Assistant. This is similar to what you will see in the Outlook 2007 Office Assistant as well. You can now configure the Out-of-Office Assistant to start and end at a particular time. This is something that many users have asked for. Also, you can now have HTML out-of-office messages, no longer just plain text. You can even have a separate out-of-office message for external senders. You might choose to send messages that just notify those particular users that they're not going to get a response from you right away. You can choose to send this to external senders from your contact list, or you can send it to all external senders. Click Save, and your out-of-office reply is set up. These same out-of-office improvements are also available in Outlook 2007. Next, we'll look at configuring working hours. Let's just click the calendar options on the left. We'll configure the working week to start on a Monday. 8 o'clock seems a little early to start the working day. Let's start the day at 9 a.m. instead. And we're done. What's new here is that the settings are remembered server-side, so your colleagues can determine your availability even if you're offline. Now we're going to look at creating an appointment. We'll keep it simple for the moment. Let's just select the calendar and then change to work week view. Let's click New to create the appointment. We enter the subject of team briefing. Then we'll use the scheduling assistant to help us complete the process of booking the meeting. We'll set the date and time first, next Thursday at 11 a.m. for 1 hour. Now let's invite Spencer. We search for his name in the address list. Just type Spencer and click the little magnifying glass icon. And there he is. Let's just see if he's free. He has some time booked out, but we'll proceed anyway for the moment. You will notice how the assistant highlights scheduling conflicts. You can see from the blue bar that Spencer is busy at this time. In the pane on the right, the scheduling assistant has made some suggestions, as to an appropriate time for the meeting. Before we sort this out, we need a room. Let's select one of the meeting rooms. As you know, resources like rooms have explicit types in Exchange 2007. They also have their own address lists, so finding resources is much easier. We'll look at that in more detail later, and we'll just keep it simple for now. We'll select a room from the link. We won't check the availability of the room, although we could. Let's hold our meeting with Spencer in Huron. It's obvious that 11 a.m. won't work since Spencer can't make it. We'll choose a recommended time from the list of suggestions that the assistant has made. Let's choose 1 p.m. It's easy to set up a meeting with help from the scheduling assistant. Now let's create an appointment for Friday. The scheduling assistant highlights an issue with our calendar. There's a conflict. We better choose another day. Let's go for next Wednesday at noon. We'll call this meeting Coho Sale. Let's get the scheduling assistant to help us pick a room and add attendees. We'll keep it simple and just invite Holly Holt. Now let's use the room picker. Let's add a quick description for the appointment. This is an urgent briefing following Frank Miller's recent telephone call. Now we send that invite. Currently, the appointment is showing in Holly's calendar, but as tentative. Let's switch to Holly's inbox and accept that invite. You can accept straight from the preview pane, so there's no need to open the message. Now let's see what happens if we change the time of the appointment. We'll pick a time that we know conflicts with something in Holly's schedule. Let's take a quick look at Holly's calendar. There are two appointments listed, and as a result, the conflicting appointments have been set to tentative in Holly's schedule. We'll look at how the calendar attendant handles changes, highlights important updates, and makes less significant changes silently. Let's see if we can't straighten out the conflicting appointment. First, let's look at the new invite. In the preview pane, the calendar attendant has highlighted the significant change, the time and date. It's also highlighted a conflict. Let's see what the conflict is. We can do this without switching to calendar view. But there's a lunch appointment that we don't want to miss. For now, we'll do nothing and wait for Spencer to realise his mistake. We'll choose a time we know is free and send the update. Let's just check the status of the appointment in Holly's calendar. We can see that the calendar attendant has moved the appointment. If we go back to Outlook Web Access, the message relating to the first update has gone. It's confusing for attendees to receive multiple updates to a meeting, so the calendar attendant presents us only with the latest update if a series has recently arrived. We'll accept this change, but we need to let Spencer know that the decorators will be in Ontario next week, although it doesn't show in the schedule, so he needs to pick another room. We see the acceptance from Holly telling us about the room being decorated. Let's change the room. We'll use the scheduling assistant again. Deselect Ontario and now browse and select Erie. The meeting status hasn't changed. The time and place remain the same. just the venue is different. The calendar attendant doesn't complicate things by changing the status back to tentative for a room change. Back to Holly's mailbox. No response is required, since this is an informational update only. Let's go back to the presentation. Let's move on to a demo on using unified messaging. In this demo, we will use Outlook Voice Access to listen to emails and to reschedule appointments. We will also use Outlook Web Access to listen to voicemail messages.
Exchange 2007 revolutionizes messaging by offering a speech-enabled unified messaging platform that integrates email, fax, and voicemail in the user's inbox with support for a variety of clients, including traditional and mobile phones. Exchange 2007 extends the anywhere access capabilities of Exchange that began with Outlook Web Access and mobile device access, and that were later extended with Outlook RPC over HTTP, now called Outlook Anywhere. Unified messaging in Exchange 2007 further extends anywhere access by allowing you to use a regular telephone to access your email, calendar, contacts, and other inbox items. Outlook Voice Access provides this capability in Exchange 2007. It provides built-in speech recognition, which allows you to access and manipulate your Exchange inbox using your voice or touch tone commands. In this demonstration, I want to show you Outlook Voice Access in action. To start out the process, I want to create an email message from Ben here and send it to Ken Myers. Then we'll use the telephone to gain access to Ken Myers' inbox and use Outlook Voice Access to read the message back. Create a new message. Use autocomplete for Ken's email address there. I've already got the text in the paste buffer. Dear Ken, all the best with your demonstration this afternoon. Remember to show all the new Outlook Voice Access features. Regards, Ben. Okay, I'm happy with that. And we'll click send. And now we'll switch over to the telephone system and try and access that message. Okay, let's dial into the unified messaging system. Okay, so enter my extension.
Ken Meyer, please enter your PIN, then press the pound key. If this is not your mailbox, press the star key.
So in this case, I've got a 6-digit PIN.
We have no new voice messages and one new email message. Please say voicemail, email, calendar, personal contacts, directory, or personal options.
Email.
Opening your inbox. First, an unread message from Beth Smith, entitled Outlook Voice Access Demonstration, arrived today at 7:37 a.m. Dear Ken, all the best with your demonstration this afternoon. Remember to show all the new Outlook Voice Access features. Regards. Then, end of message. You can say, play, next, delete, reply, mark as unread, main menu.
Okay, I'm just going to hang up there. That seemed to be word for word, so that worked well. Okay, in this part of the demonstration, I'm going to send a voicemail message to Ken, and then we'll use Outlook Web Access to view that. Hey, Ken, it's Ben here. I hope the demonstration for Outlook Voice Access is going well, and I will speak to you this evening at our regular evening meal.
To accept, press 1. To send your message with high importance and accept, press 1-1. Play. Message sent.
So that's the message sent. Now we'll wait for a moment and see if it arrives in the mailbox. In fact, actually, I'll just urge it along here. Okay, we have an anonymous message. Caller ID is obviously withheld. Exchange voicemail. And you can see here that it indicates it's a voice message with the telephone symbol. And we have a little play symbol here underneath, a quick play icon. Let's try that out.
Hi, Dennis Ben here. I hope the demonstration for Avatar voice access is going well, and I will speak to you this evening at our regular evening meeting.
And you can see on the right-hand side, I've got an embedded control here for listening to the message again. And I have an option, play on phone. I'm not going to test that right now. Instead, we're going to move on. But that allows me to redirect the message and listen to the message on any telephone. That's particularly useful, I suppose, if you're in the middle of a busy office and you don't particularly want your work colleagues to listen in on your call. Okay, that seemed to work fine, so we're going to move on. Let's take a look at using Outlook Voice Access to modify items in the calendar. Let's have a look at the calendar for Ken. We've got a number of different meetings. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he's got a bug report meeting with Ben. Then a tech ed briefing again with Ben in conference room 2. And then later on, there's the team dinner at local curry place at 9 o'clock. So what I'm going to try and do is to make a change to an appointment using Outlook Voice Access. So if I dial the number... Okay, send to the extension.
Ken Meyer, please enter your PIN, then press the pound key.
Okay, a 6-digit PIN.
You have no new voice messages and no new email messages. Please save voicemail, email, calendar, personal contacts, directory, or personal options.
Calendar.
Sure, and which day shall I open?
Tomorrow.
Opening tomorrow's calendar. First, a meeting from 2 to 3 in your office, entitled Bug Report. You can say, next, I'll be late. Clear my calendar. Or more options.
I'll be late.
Okay, and how late do you think you'll be?
15 to 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes. Is that right?
Yes.
All right, I've sent a message to all participants that you'll be 15 to 20 minutes late. By the way, you can save time in the future by saying things like, I'll be 10 minutes late, continuing the calendar, a meeting from 5 to 6 in conference room 2, entitled TED Briefing. You can say, next, I'll be late, clear my calendar, or more options.
Next.
Last, a meeting from 9 to 10 in... January 9th, entitled Team Dinner. You can say, next day, I'll be late. Clear my calendar, or more options.
Clear my calendar.
Okay, I can use cancel and decline to clear your appointment, starting with the current one. Just say a time of day to clear to, like 3:30 p.m., or a number of days, like 2 days. You can also say cancel to return to your calendar.
10 p.m.
10 p.m. Is that right?
Yes.
All right, I'm about to send cancellation or decline messages for the meetings. Would you like to add a voice message to those?
Yes.
I'll start recording your short message after the tone. When you're finished, just hang up or press any key for more options.
I'm sorry, Ben. I don't fancy a curry tonight. Thanks. So I'm hung up now, and we'll give that a moment to think it through and see if the meetings are successfully updated. Flick over to Ben's mailbox here, and we can see that the team dinner has been declined, and the bug report meeting is going to be late, 15 to 20 minutes late for this appointment. Well, that seems to have worked quite well. And let's flip back into Ken's mailbox, and... refresh the calendar, and as you can see, if we take a look tomorrow, we've got the bug report, okay, which is going to be 15 to 20 minutes late, and most importantly, We've got a portion of time blocked out because we can't make that particular meeting. Okay, that's great. That concludes the demonstration.
Let's return to the agenda. During this last part of today's session, we're going to look at using both the Exchange Management Console and the Exchange Management Shell to configure and administer Exchange Server 2007. When the Exchange product group set about designing the new Management Console interface, they wanted to provide consistency across the management toolset. This includes the Exchange Management Console, the Exchange Management Shell, which we'll discuss shortly, and the EX Setup command. The things that get configured whenever you make administrative changes in Exchange include the Exchange Store, the Registry, and Active Directory. At the heart of everything is the Management Engine, which is driven by Windows PowerShell commands, or commandlets. Command line programs like the shell and EX Setup tap directly into this engine. Whereas when you use the Exchange Management Console, your actions are processed by WinForms and the Windows PowerShell data provider before being passed to the Windows PowerShell engine. The important thing to remember here is that however you choose to administer the system, from the command line using the shell or from the wizard in the console, you are actually executing the same Windows PowerShell commands. This consistency makes the system powerful and extensible. So in essence, it doesn't make much difference whether you choose to use the new Exchange Management Console or the shell, as beneath the surface, the shell is doing all the work. Let's quickly talk about the shell. The shell, known as Windows PowerShell, has been provided to make your lives easier. The shell can accomplish all the tasks that the console can, but is more suited to the bulk administrative tasks that you perform. A GUI-based administration tool like the Exchange Management Console is great for ad hoc administrative tasks, but it is not ideally suited to repetitive tasks. This type of situation is where the Exchange Management Shell is helpful. Based on the Microsoft Windows Server PowerShell technology, it builds on the operations that are available in the Exchange Management Console and extends your administrative capabilities. Some things can only be achieved through the shell. Unix administrators will be familiar with the term shell. A shell provides a powerful, flexible, and scriptable command line experience that allows you to perform any administrative task that you can perform by using the console. The difference between using the shell and the console is that the shell is ideally suited to repetitive tasks. PowerShell is not a text-based shell, but instead uses an object model based on a Microsoft.NET platform. It has a substantial number of built-in commands that provide you with a powerful toolset for script-based administration. The shell is ideally suited to performing repetitive bulk operations. If you have to create mailboxes for 1,000 user accounts, the Exchange Management Console process would be slow and tedious. But you can achieve the same objective with a few simple commands. And if you save these commands to a file, you can reuse your scripts later. Now let's turn our attention to the Exchange Management Console. The first thing that you'll notice when you use Exchange is the clean interface. The navigation hierarchy is now called the console tree. Things are grouped logically into four work centers. The recipient configuration work center, which contains all the recipient objects like mailboxes, contacts, and distribution groups. The server configuration work center, which groups servers by role, bridgehead, client access, mailbox, and unified messaging. The organization configuration work center, from which you can administer organizational settings like transport rules, mailbox folders, and unified messaging dial plans and IP gateways. And finally, the toolbox, which contains shortcuts to useful tools, like the best practice analyzer or the queue viewer. During the session, we'll take a good look at each of these work centers in turn. As you select items in the console tree, the results pane updates. For example, because the mailbox role is selected in the server configuration work center, the result pane is listing all the servers that host that role. The work pane reflects the item in the result pane, in this case child objects of the mailbox server role. The action pane allows you to perform an administrative action on the object selected in either the result or work pane. You can also access the same actions from the context menu of many items. Let's look at these two interfaces side by side in the next few demos. In this demo, we'll use the Exchange Management Console to perform a number of administrative tasks. In this demonstration, we'll look at creating and managing mailboxes and mailbox databases using the Exchange Management Console. To create the degree of separation between Active Directory and Exchange Server administration that some administrators want or need, there are two ways to create a mailbox. The new mailbox command creates a new mailbox and the associated Active Directory account, while the enable mailbox command adds the Exchange-specific attributes to an existing Active Directory user account. Let's start with a look at the former, enabling a mailbox for an existing user account. We want to create a standard user mailbox. Let's locate the user account, in this case, Mike Nash. Nothing to change on the mailbox setting page, so let's click Next. We then confirm the settings. The underlying shell command is displayed on the completion page. You will notice that the Enable Mailbox command was used to create Mike's mailbox. Now let's create another mailbox using the new mailbox command. This time we'll select New User. A dialog box appears into which we need to provide information. First, we put our user's account into the correct OU, Sales. The first name is Carrie. The last name is Hensian, and the logon name is Hensian K. We enter the usual password. Now let's move on. We don't need to change the defaults for the mailbox settings. Again, we confirm our selections. The underlying script used the new mailbox command. When you use the new mailbox or enable mailbox commands, you need to know what parameters to specify. The way that the console shows you what you did is helpful in getting up to speed with the shell. You can even cut and paste the whole lot into the shell. Let's make a mental note of the following required parameter, which we'll see in the next part of the demo, database. When you create a mailbox, you must specify where the mailbox will be stored. Okay, let's complete that process. In this next part of the demonstration, we want to move a block of mailboxes from one store to another. First, we want to know which mailboxes are in the primary database. We can use the filter in the results pane to determine that. Now let's create a filter, in this case based on database. That still gives quite a lot of mailboxes. We want a subset of these, so let's apply an additional filter. Now let's move these mailboxes. Let's select them all and launch the Move Mailbox wizard. Then we simply select the mailbox we want to move them to and click Next. We'll just accept the defaults as we proceed through the wizard. The move operation has started and it will take a few moments to complete. Once it's complete, you'll notice that the list of recipients is blank because of the filter. Let's remove the filters now. Let's perform another day-to-day server administration task. We're going to create a new mailbox database. First, we select the storage group from the work pane that we want to add the database to. We'll use the first storage group. Next, we click the exposed link in the action pane and create the store. We'll use the name. A couple more clicks and it's created. Let's return to the presentation. Let's have a closer look at the shell in this next demo. In this demo, we'll use the shell to perform a number of tasks. We'll also use a script to provision a server. In this demonstration, we'll review some of the standard tasks that you will perform day to day in your Exchange organization. In the past, you might have created mailboxes and mail stores with the Exchange System Manager. The power of the shell enables you to perform these tasks quickly and effectively from the command line and with minimal code. To demonstrate the power of this, let's move multiple mailboxes using the command line. Instead of picking mailboxes by name, like we did in Exchange Management Console, let's move all the mailboxes from one database to another. First, let's see what mailboxes we have by using the getMailbox command. This will tell us which mailboxes are present on the database mailbox store. If we wanted to remove the mailbox store database, we'd need to move all the mailboxes from that store to another store. This is certainly possible with the Exchange Management Console, but it's a time-consuming task. Using the shell, we can perform a bulk move that migrates all mailboxes from this database to the newly created Mailbox Store 2 database. Since we're a bit new to this shell experience, we're going to use the validate only parameter to see what will happen first. If the results look good, we can execute the move. In this demonstration, we will create a new mail store using the Exchange Management shell, and then we'll verify its creation using the Exchange Management console. You can string these simple commands together with prompts to create a powerful provisioning script. This command will create a new mail store in our first storage group. If we look in Exchange Management Console, we can see that the new store exists, but has not been mounted. We could mount it here, but let's go back to the shell to do that. Now let's mount the database. Let's switch back to the console for a moment. If we change a property such as the deletion settings, we'll be able to see this reflected in the Exchange Management shell. In this demonstration, you saw the parity between the shell experience and Exchange Management Console. Simple one-line commands can change any configuration within Exchange and related Active Directory properties. We can also manipulate tables to view the result of the last change. The Exchange Management shell is perfect for automation and bulk changes in the Exchange environment. In this demonstration, we will create users with a simple script that has been written using a string of tasks to provision a server. Scripts can be created to string a number of tasks together for some powerful provisioning. First, the script creates some storage groups. Then it creates mailbox databases. Then it uses a .csv file with a list of users and creates them in Active Directory, as well as mailbox enables them. Let's take a quick look at the .csv file it will use. The password column is blank. The password is generated by a function in the provisioning script we just looked at. You can appreciate how rapidly this can be done with so few lines of script, compared to writing this in Visual Basic and using several APIs. We're using an external file, newuser.csv, and accessing its content using the import.csv command. The result is piped to the provisioning script for action. We'll return to the presentation for a session summary. Let's run through a session summary. Today's session covered three core themes of Exchange Server 2007. First, email needs to be reliable. For most of you out there, this is your top concern. Ensuring a robust and reliable server platform should be the primary goal for any messaging system these days, and it's one that Exchange 2007 certainly provides. In addition, you want to be in control of the messaging environment to the extent that you can conform to legal and corporate-wide policies that require you to journal, archive, and search through messages. And this needs to be easy. Information workers say they need access not just to email, but also to voicemail and faxes. They don't want to be tied to their desks either. Mobile devices are being widely adopted for good reason. People are mobile. Users want anywhere access to all sorts of messaging data. Finally, users say that setting up a meeting and choosing a room to hold it in can be frustrating. Trying to tie everyone's schedules together can waste a lot of time as well. Exchange 2007 aims to make things easier for the information worker. The last theme focuses on making sure that the IT professionals, you, get what you need. You say that email is the most important application in your organization, that without it, you face big problems. You say that current systems are too complex and expensive to maintain, and that many of the day-to-day tasks you perform would be better suited to scripted automation rather than to tedious manual configuration. Exchange 2007 is all about giving you that control. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, these three themes were kept to the fore, ensuring that Exchange would provide the messaging system you need. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/EXC-114 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. These books can be found at all major bookstores and online retailers. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Press books, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using Microsoft's products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including security and patch management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft certification program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go and become a fully certified Systems Administrator, MCSA, or Systems Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Ian Brackenbury, TechNet's Subscriptions Product Manager, to cover these changes.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed newsgroups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.